Coming at you live from Arachna, the worst universe in all of the Spider-Verse. It's Cartoon Night in Canada.
Hey, what you watching?
Got a problem with cartoon?
Episode of Cartoon Night in Canada, a nostalgic podcast where we journey through the animated past to find what cartoons made here in Canada are worth remembering. I'm your co-host, Chris Lucy Antonio.
And I'm your co-host, Sylvie Kettles.
And we are in week two of Canada Dubcember.
Woohoo!
Driving the cultural conversation around December towards anime.
Because that is the true meaning of the season.
Always has been, always will be.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. God has no place. Religion has no place in your December festivities. Devote all that time to anime.
Anime is your new religion. It is your church.
You're welcome.
And we're sorry.
At the same time.
We can be both.
I always am. Should we do the uncomfortable media thing
right at the top? I would like to do that first.
Before we get into the fun anime chat, let's put a real sour note.
Let's just put a real damper on things. So we here at Cartoon Night in Canada, we are a Canadian media podcast, and I think that's why, at least why I felt it very important that we start by acknowledging that the current landscape of Canadian media has been one of absolute cowardice. Mm-hmm. That the CTV, our biggest news media channel network, has been explicitly banned from saying the name Palestine or from running any stories that are pro-Palestinian. And in the face of, let's say what it is, a fucking genocide, the fact that Canada, in our government and our media, has been silent and complicit is despicable.
Mm-hmm.
Do fucking better, Canada. And for those who can, force your government to do better for all of our sakes.
And for anyone taking offense or objection to us taking time out of our Canadian animation podcast to talk about a very serious, very real genocide that is occurring right now, go fuck yourself and stop listening.
We don't want you!
Yeah, sorry to unveil the politics. I'm sure this will get a very bad review on Apple Podcast, and we thank you for it.
Yeah, you know what? Nothing is better advertisement than, you know, saying what we are, which is lefty scum fighting for freedom, because we are not free until all of us are free.
We are eyeing down the barrel of a nationalized media conglomerate that is driving the narrative towards outright censorship.
It's there. I think we're already there.
Yeah, and myself and Sylvie have literally no power. Like, we talk about stupid cartoons from our childhood, but if we can use whatever this little platform we're on to just make it abundantly clear where we stand on the issue and have more bravery than the biggest, most well-financed, possibly nationalized media entity to say we support a free Palestine.
From the river to the sea.
Gaza must be free. It's not... This is just so... I'm taking the issue seriously, but considering what we're going to be talking about in 5 minutes, this is just... This is so morbidly hilarious.
It is a little tonal whiplash.
We have to do it, and Shame on us for not doing it sooner.
Yeah, I would have felt worse about hiding this at the end of the episode.
No, and that's why I wanted to do it right. And like, I had a little bit about our opinions on bugs, but like, you know, fuck that.
I'm sorry, we cannot do the bit.
There's more pressing matters. People are dying. Lives are at stake, and you should be as outraged as we are. As get out there and use what voice you have for the good.
Let's all commit to working together to making the world a better place than we found it. And
ship has sailed, but you know, we can do a lot of reduced harm.
We have to try.
So anyway.
So spiders.
Yeah, just play the new metal
just
theme
play the
and we'll
shitty fucking intro. Spider-Rotic, we do. If you true, then you could be too. It's cool, you could join our team, no matter how dark it seems. If you look the powers inside you, so strive to be a great rider. We're riding on, so now we're calling off. Blessed riders, blessed riders. I put it on the line, yeah. I know I will survive, that's right. We ain't afraid.
On today's podcast, we are saddling up the closest eight-legged critter and taking a look at spider riders. Spider riders.
Spider riders.
You know it's good because it rhymes. Yeah.
Okay.
conceived by Ted Anasty and Patsy Cameron Anasty. Oh, I didn't realize that. They're a husband and wife team.
Cute.
Yeah. As a series of YA novels first published in 2004, the series was later adapted into a television show by the Toronto-based conglomerate Cookie Jar Media and Japan's B-Train Productions and fucking PA Works.
Fucking my lord and savior PA Works?
The same hands that touched Shirobaku brought you Spider Riders.
The people who made you weep with Angel Beats. Helped out with season one of Spider Riders. Granted, this is, like, we were talking about this earlier, this is very, like, early in their existence as a studio when they hadn't made anything independently. They were just doing a lot of episode work for other studios. They were, like, a studio that was contracted out to do animation for other shows.
Mm-hmm. They were, like, an ancillary production house that would just be brought in on contract, and I would not start doing original productions until 2008 with True Tears.
Like,
there you go. That's when the PR works, PA works that we know and love came to be. But before that, they were toiling in the doldrums of contract work in the anime industry. So the fact that they even survived that and most of their employees are still there is a miracle in itself.
They have Ghost in the Shell standalone complex on their resume.
I'm assuming they're not putting Spider Riders on that same resume?
I don't think so, because this is the first time I've ever heard the title Spider Riders.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, the series aired on Teletoon and Tokyo TV between March 2006 and April 2007, lasting 52 episodes, two 26-episode seasons. For the podcast today, I mean, we do this with all of these animes that we are covering.
We definitely had to.
We kind of had to, yeah.
This is striking me as another one where, like, if we had done the imagination and just plopped ourselves in media res, we would have had a bad time.
Yeah. You know what? I was going to say maybe I would have been more engaged, but just by how befuddling it all is, but I was also pretty, like, not confused, because this is very simple, just hollow. This hollowed me.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, we're going to do what we always do and just start at the beginning. Episode 1, The Inner World. Original air date, March 25th, 2006. A little fun note. It aired with the second and third episode, Never Give Up and First Impressions, respectively, as part of a big premiere event that Teletoon put on. They later aired those episodes again in August of this original season run, and I kind of liked that they did that, because it was, they aired this first three episodes right before the last three episodes of the first season.
Oh, okay, so just in case someone was dropping in, you'd at least have a good idea of where everything started?
Yeah, I like that. I like that accommodation towards the audience, even though this is Peltoon we're talking about, and they played their shows on rerun in perpetuity.
I did read somewhere too that this show, like, they re-aired the show in like 2008, so it had a second cycle.
I mean, they're striking when the iron is hot. Like, people were crazy for Spider Riders in 2008.
Oh, why are you laughing?
Why are you laughing at that statement of fact?
I've never heard of this show.
Well, you lived a sheltered childhood.
I also never. Yeah, I wasn't the Teletoon one.
Yes. See, look what you missed out on.
I missed on early PA Works animation.
That's actually true. There you go.
And also B-Train. Let's not understate. B-Train is also a Titan. This whole month is just us going, wait, which Titan of the anime industry fucking worked with a Canadian company this time? In the early 2000s?
Which Titan was willing to sully their reputation just for like a year and lower themselves to work with us Canucks?
And this week it's fucking B-Train. That's famously the Girls with Guns anime studio.
That is them, isn't it?
That's their whole deal. It's Girls with Guns or it's Dot Hack.
And Metabots.
It's Girls with Guns or it's Dot Hack.
And Metabots. I will not let you take that away from me. Because that's the only B-Train show I've watched.
They only did the first season.
I know.
I have seen three Dot Hack series. I've seen Noir and Madlax.
I've had Noir recommended to me.
It's good.
I've heard.
It's one of the very last Cell animated anime.
That's okay. That's actually interesting.
And again, score by Yuki Kajira.
Well, there we go.
25 out of 10 do recommend anything that she's scored.
She did not score this, though. She did not.
She did not.
She did not lower herself to work on Spider Riders.
She was too busy working for Tsubasa Chronicle.
Probably a better use of her time.
Yeah.
Anyway, this episode was presumably directed by series director Koichi Mishimo and written by the person assigned to adapt Spider Riders into anime, Yosuke Kuroda. So, I did what I always do when we're dealing with a show that has an opening scroll.
Oh, yes, you've got it all typed out for us?
Yes. Okay. Unlike Bakugan that had, you know, two full paragraphs of exposition.
This is like three sentences.
Yeah, they kept it light. They kept it light on this one. Ahem. There exists within the planet Earth a fantastic lost world. Holy shit, it just clicked into me. We're doing Hollow Earth shit.
We're doing Hollow Earth shit. I mean, you could also argue this is like Journey to the Center of the Earth shit.
Which is also Hollow Earth shit.
I mean, technically. But you know what? I'm not gonna say Hollow Earthers aren't using Journey to the Center of the Earth as evidence, but I've also never engaged with that community, so I don't know.
That's stupid. They should be using Spider Riders.
They should be using Spider Riders.
If you believe in a Hollow Earth because you want to ride a big mechanical spider, all power to you.
You know what? You're valid.
Anyway, there exists within the planet Earth a fantastic lost world. In this inner world, elite warriors ride huge spiders and bravely fight against evil. When the wicked rise, the world goes out, calling all spider riders. Did you get all that?
I did.
Okay.
Can I just say right off the bat?
Mm-hmm.
It's giving Saint Seiya vibes.
Kind of.
This
kind of is, yeah.
It might be the fucking pauldrons, but this show is giving Saint Seiya.
Would you like to hear another description of the plot?
Yes, please.
So this was not given by the show itself. This is, for whatever reason, the description of the show on IMDb.
Excellent. Go.
a bunch of these guys that ride around on giant arachnids to try and stop that bad guys. The bad guys are really evil and ride scorpions, and the spiders talk.
Well, shit!
Someone, okay, look, IMDb has an administration problem. They are just letting the lunatics run the asylum over there.
Mm-hmm.
There, it needs to be cleaned up. Right here, for the official description of spider riders, that is the first thing you read when you, like, Google it.
Oh no.
That's a problem.
Yeah, that's not great for spider riders.
Not a lie was told. That is an accurate description.
It is.
But it kind of sells it short.
Yeah, like, if you want your target audience to watch your show, you gotta fight back. I mean, granted, I don't think anyone other than us is watching Spider Riders in the year of our Lord 2023.
I'll push back on that because somebody bought the domain for spiderriders.com and now runs it as a fan site.
Whoa!
If anything that the show has told us, there's, like, that the show, as in Cartoon Night in Canada, has taught us, there's always a community out there.
That's true.
Size does not matter. It can be a community of, like, three people.
And that's a community.
The listeners of Cartoon Night Canada are a community. Self-own. good times. So what is this plot about, anyway?
Okay, so the plot of Spider Riders is that our protagonist, Hunter Steele...
A very 1983 porn name.
Very much so. But if it was a porn star name, there would have been an E at the end of Steele.
You are so right.
Yeah, his name is spelt just like the word Steele. So he's an 11-year-old boy from the outer world, so Earth. He is a human boy child. Follows the instructions of his grandfather's journal, and falls ass over tea kettle into the inner world, where the spider riders and infectoids are at war, and a manacle, like a this weird sci-fi bracelet thing, just attaches itself to him, and that manacle marks him as a spider rider, as a great warrior who can team up with a giant spider to be his partner and rise up against evil.
Yeah, that kind of covers it. This 11-year-old, on the written word of his potentially senile grandfather, breaks into an Aztec temple.
Mm-hmm.
The architecture of this temple is very interesting.
He rocks up in what is clearly South America.
Outer world, yeah.
Yeah. And at the word of his grandfather, yeets himself into a ramp going down quite deep into the guts of the temple.
Look, I'm not. I know he's a protagonist, and this is an anime, and there's supposed to be a degree of like a suspension of a belief. But also, where are his parents?
Where the fuck are your parents, small child? And also, I just want to call him out right away. He falls quite far into this temple, and then when he lands in an empty room, he's like, geez, a dead end? At no point, like, my very first thought was, if it's a dead end, how the fuck are you getting out of there, kid?
No, there was a potential for this series to end with a, like, spelunking rescue mission to recover the body.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, he did not survive that descent down into the bowels of this temple, like, maybe, like, hit his head and just... This has all been a death dream.
Oh, don't be that theorist.
I will be that theorist for things I do not care for. The things I have no respect for, absolutely. I will comfortably call it a death dream of the main character.
I mean, he is an 11-year-old, and 11-year-olds famously fear nothing.
I mean, yeah, I was pretty dead. Yeah. Of soul at 11. I mean, that makes perfect sense.
Is that, that Tumblr post, an 11-year-old could face God and be unimpressed?
Is that a real Tumblr post?
Yes. It was something about, like, specifically anime 11-year-olds and be like, I don't know how they can do all of that shit, and then someone else being like, have you met an 11-year-old?
Fair point. So he So he just picks up the manacle by accident, right?
This, well, like, he... For, not even
for what
picks
is all
up.
Intents and purposes, yeah. A power morpher.
Yes. This is one part Sentai.
One part mecha.
One part mecha, one part shonen.
Ticking all the boxes for this demographic.
Yeah, yeah. We are targeting, like, 12-year-old boys.
Why else would his name be so cool, like Hunter Steel?
Hunter Steel!
Just the most protagonist that ever... That's going to be probably a theme for all of this, all of these shows that we cover this
the
month.
The most protagonist-coded protagonist?
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't get into it with Bakugan.
He's also a fire sign.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Bakugan, like, he's a fire guy, and, like, fire is the protagonist element.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the case of Hunter Steel, his spider is blue, which is one of the protagonist colors. Your male protagonist is either blue or red themed.
And you better believe that there is a non-zero chance that they have goggles of some type.
I mean, he's already got those, like, spider headband on.
Yeah, from the beginning, he was a spider enthusiast.
It's really funny, because, like, he's supposed, like, they're writing him to be kind of scared, or at least jumpy around spiders, but, like, he's got multiple, like, his goggles are meant to elicit the idea of multiple eyes, his hair, he's got 8 legs of hair in his little protagonist-kun updo.
I did not even clue into that one.
Yeah, his hair is spider legs.
Oh my god.
Like, it makes sense that the inner world would be very heavily spider-coated since he lands in the, like, Arachnia Kingdom. Like, that makes sense that they would be spider-coated. He's just an Earth kid.
But he's the product of a spider-coated family.
Yes.
Because his grandfather apparently... A big mover and shaker in Arachna.
Must have been.
So the flow of this first episode, I will say this, it wastes no time.
Yeah, it's feeling pretty bog standard. They do not spend any time in the normal world. They waste no time in just flinging him into the new space.
Which I kind of appreciate because they make it, like, ostensibly clear that the next 51 episodes of this series, there will be no scene that takes place in the outer world.
Yeah, they don't want to waste time, like, introducing his friends and family in the outer world, because then when they spend the other 51 episodes of this show not discussing those relationships at all, specifically you and I are not going to be sitting here going, oh god, his parents must be so worried about him.
You know what, maybe his parents were like, when Hunter decided, like, yeah, I'm gonna follow Granddad's diary and go excavate a temple, I'm sure his parents were like, finally.
Finally we're free.
He is an obnoxious character.
Yeah, he's not great.
He is a... Oh, man. It's hard to put into words just how much of a drain on my sensibilities this kid is. Like, he is... Ooh.
Yeah, I don't get him. From the first episode alone, he's a really hard read for a protagonist.
He's very brash, he throws himself into any situation, and highly, highly opinionated.
Yeah. There was one bit of, like, character animation that I was pretty fond of, and it was, I do like the relationship that he has with Shadow at the very beginning. Love a duo bond where they are introduced and one is actively terrified of the other. But there was a bit of, like, character animation that I was, like, kind of endeared to, where, like, he's hiding from Shadow and then gives the camera a thumbs up. Like, oh hell yeah, I got away from him. I also like that, I mean, things could change, but I really like that the stupid shonen duo of, like, main characters who, like, bicker and hate each other's guts, in this case, is not, like, the fucking tsundere love interest.
Well, that's the funny thing about this relationship between Hunter and Shadow, is that I think Hunter is completely oblivious to how Shadow feels about him.
Yeah, 100%. He's like, I mean, we're a team! And Shadow's like, I fucking hate you. I don't know how to make it clearer. I don't like you.
We have a classic dumbass protagonist who is just so noble that that nobility takes up all of his brain space.
Yeah.
Like, he just wants to fight evil and be the best, and I'm sorry, he has there's no capacity for anybody else. Even the creature that he'll be riding into battle.
Yeah. What are social relationships and bonds? I only know heroic sacrifice.
I only know virtue. Like, he's a dumbass, but he can ride that spider good.
He do ride that spider good.
He do ride that spider good.
I'm also, I find it really, and this is like a genre thing, I love it when protagonists get a very unwieldy weapon and then can just use it because of, like, innate superpowers.
Well, when he goes through the process of morphing, he has a whole Sentai transformation sequence where he gains this armor and a weapon. He seems completely unfazed by this, like...
But, like, that is... He's got, like, a double-sided spear, and is complete... He is 11 years old, he's just been handed a double-sided spear, and he's absolutely gonna rip out somebody's Achilles tendon with that.
I mean, he barely flinches when he sees the giant mechanical spider.
Yeah, no, he's just like, oh, dope.
Of course. It doesn't even seem to register that he is in an alternate universe right now.
No, he fully, like, goes through the whole Shadow chase sequence, and then is like, oh, I guess I made it to the inner Earth.
Barely registers. He's like, whatever. Like, I've got work to do.
He had, like, a whole scene to himself before he met Shadow, before, what's her name?
Corona.
Corona, before, like, Corona shot.
Unfortunate name.
Very, very tragic. Like, before she even showed up, he's got a second to himself, and he doesn't really spend any of that time wondering where he is, or, like, putting two and two together to be like, oh, I was underground, and now there's sky above me. I must have made it to the inner Earth.
He really put all his faith into his grandpa's insane ramblings.
Yeah.
I really feel like the parents should have intervened when Grandpa had some time with little
Hunter. Maybe his parents are dead. Maybe he was raised by his grandfather, and that's...
It'd be nice to learn any of that.
Yeah. We have zero context for this child.
Oh, no, like, we have zero context for this series. I feel like it just begins.
Yeah.
Like
we don't know. Maybe we will learn how his grandfather learned about the inner Earth and how to get there and how he got back.
Oh, no, he does, because he's a character in later episodes.
Oh, okay. I thought Gramps was dead.
I don't know if he's dead or not, but good old Digger Steel.
What a name.
Another 1983 porn name.
Oh, okay, I get it. So Digger found the inner Earth, and Hunter is gonna conquer the inner Earth.
Yeah, apparently there is a whole potential prophecy with Princess Sparkle and Prince Lunum?
Yeah. Only one of whom we meet this episode.
Yeah. But apparently, Hunter Steel, the 11-year-old, could be either the savior of this world or its downfall.
Oh, so it's a Scrap Princess thing.
Something like that, yeah.
I'm so sorry for comparing this show to Scrap Princess.
No, you're in your right.
That's not fair to Spider Riders.
Well, if we're thinking of, like, what's going to be the downfall of this inner world, you know what? My money's on the character named Corona. I don't know why.
just a funny feeling.
I'm getting a vibe. I'm getting a vibe from that character that I don't trust.
Just for funsies, I did watch the Japanese opening sequence for this.
Probably a better song.
It's... Eh.
Okay, never mind.
It's mid. But she
can't
does
compare with Disney record nu metal.
Corona does have the angstiest, like, backstory animation bits.
Oh, okay.
So I assume there's some tragedy there.
I poked around a bit, and apparently she has no memory of her past.
Oh, okay, that would make sense.
It's that old chestnut.
Love it.
Yeah. Again, another thing that we are going to, another little aspect of all of these pseudo animes that we're going to be covering, another thing we're going to be running into over and over again. Mm-hmm. They're heavily influenced and trope based.
Absolutely. These are like, these feel very much less like they were, like they are written with like a, oh, we have this idea, this goal in mind, and mm-hmm. more like, what are all of the bits that we need to put in this to make it like a classic Sentai anime?
Yeah, how
do we make it like Voltron, but also Saint Seiya, but also Power Rangers?
You can do all three.
We can do all three. Spider Riders is all three.
But we have to make sure that the whatever it is that this character is interacting with, riding, it has to look like a toy from the onset.
It's gotta be marketable.
I'm just really curious about this. I made, again, the downfall of watching the first episode in a 52-episode series. I'm really curious about this race of talking mechanical spiders.
Yes.
And how they're conscripted into the humans' war with the infecteds.
Yeah, because, like, how...
It feels like Shadow has no say.
Exactly. Like, it's not like he was, like, a dormant being inside of the manacle or anything. Like, he was just fully living his life, wandering around being a little spider guy.
Who brokered the treaty between the humans and the spiders that we will cohabitate this arachna? I know it's named after your species, but... What if we ruled it and you were our servants?
Mm-hmm.
Is Spider Riders about slavery?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Strike that from the record. Stop your fan theory crafting. It's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, this
That's
is not...
That's dangerous alchemy you're working with.
I promise this is not a metaphor.
Okay. I don't know why that sounds so, like, rough. Like, I promise you this is not a metaphor. Like, that's the most damning criticism you can give to it.
Okay, I am sorry. You mentioned that, like, the spiders are clearly designed to look like toys. I'm trying to find toys.
There has to be, right?
Well, okay, so I am finding an article from 2006. It's barely an article. It's, like, three tiny paragraphs. The point of it is basically that Mattel has the exclusive rights to Spider Rider action figures, vehicles, playsets, and roleplay toys. But I'm not seeing any. Like, I'm seeing, like, an anime figurine for Spider Riders, but that's not a toy. Or so the collectors keep telling me.
Yeah, and well, Mattel would never make, like, high-quality figures. They would just make, you know, simple blister box toys
exactly.
that you get at Toys R Us. That's, okay, that's really interesting, because I thought that was the entire, like, a part of this whole endeavor was that this... show this concept is incredibly marketable.
Yeah, it should have been. I don't know why it wasn't.
That's really, because I thought that was going to be a theme for this month, is that everything has a
gratuitous... we're looking at all the silly toys.
Yeah,
but like,
I don't know what to feel right now.
I'm confused, man. Oh, I just pulled up the cover of the first book. These character designs are way cooler.
Okay, send it in the chat. I want to see.
Okay, I'm going to see if I can find a better version of this image, because it's very small.
Okay, and after I see this, it'll be a great segue to talk about the look of this show.
Yeah.
I stand corrected. I thought that... Spider Riders, I guess they had the book series that was making a pretty penny, and they had like a couple of, they had a web browser game, I think I read.
Yes.
Great. Can't exactly monetize that too much. Just make hunks of plastic.
Just make some hunks of plastic.
Oh, wait. I found one. I found a Spider Rider.
You found
toy.
A Spider Rider toy?
Yes, I did. Okay. There. Okay, cooler character designs? If this is how they look, I'm sorry. That character named Corona can't... They need to change that name.
They absolutely do. Sorry to be the one to tell you this. This is not Spider Riders. That's
what
Venom.
Do you mean? No. He's got a thing. He's riding a spider. Like, that's Spider Rider.
That is fully Venom.
Can you please read to me the bottom left text on this box?
Includes one Venom and five Venom discs.
Ahem. Super Bugbuster, Venom, Spider Rider.
Bottom, sorry.
You can go to hell. I win.
Sorry, I was reading the bottom right text, which is Toy Biz. That's not Mattel.
Whatever. Mattel sold it off to Toy Biz and took the lucrative Spider Rider IP and merged it with this stupid upstart thing nobody cares about called Spider-Man.
Okay, anyway, back to my point at hand. These character designs are sick as hell.
They have character.
Yeah. They are very dated, but I love them.
Oh no, this is high schooler deviant art school of character design.
Yes. But
it works.
Yeah, and I love that all of the characters, not just the protagonist, have eight hair strands. They all have
it's consistent.
They were like, you know what? We're making spiders our thing. We have to commit to the bit.
It's always better than not.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is some edge to this character design here. What do you think about the look of Spider Riders, the show?
I don't hate it. I was very happy that I was able to correctly identify by look alone that this was B-Train, because it is very much their house style.
Yeah, I didn't clue in right away because I'm not as familiar with B-Train as you are, but looking at it now and looking at a little bit of Dot Hack, yeah, I'm seeing it.
The similarities are there. This is Dot Hack through a Saint Seiya filter. Where, like, oh, our characters need to have some sort of uniform look.
I mean, we're dealing with Canadian co-produced anime. It's just the pick and mix of anime. Just
yeah.
Whatever you want, throw it in.
What do white kids know about anime?
Spiders.
Spider, Voltron, Saint Seiya.
Power Rangers.
God.
I know that's a tokusatsu, but still, Power Rangers.
I know this is completely unrelated. You can feel free to cut this. Did you see the Knights of the Zodiac movie?
Knights of the Zodiac movie?
They made a Saint Seiya movie. Sean Bean must have financed it because he's a fucking weeb and he's in it.
Oh, that was this year.
Yeah. There was, like, zero marketing for it. I only saw it because, like, me and a coworker were like, oh, it's cheap night. We should go see a movie. What's playing? And then we just scrolled through and fucking Knights of the Zodiac was there. And I was like, huh, I haven't heard anything about this. Surely it can't be related to Saint Seiya. And then it was.
Oh, wow. So apparently what this director is best known for is just... He's best known for working on The Witcher for the game intros and outros.
Uh-huh.
Just give that guy the Saint Seiya movie.
And I must call out specifically the makeup department for that movie. Because they give a girl main character, when she's entering, like, Athena goddess mode at the end, and she gets her very bad purple wig... Even worse than her very bad wig is her fucking mascara, because she has, like, a lot of close-ups at the end of the movie, and it is the clumpiest mascara I have ever seen in my goddamn life.
The fuck? Famke Janssen? Nick Stahl? What is this?
Saint Seiya, baby.
In 2023, what are... It doesn't matter. It was a box office bomb. It'll be rightfully forgotten.
Yeah. Not cool. By me, though, is the problem.
Getting us back on track.
Yeah, that was it.
I like the look of this world.
I do, too.
I think this is a well-designed world. I think it gives off a lot of, honestly, Journey to the Center of the Earth vibes. It feels mm-hmm. very much like a prehistoric primordial kind of world that is just a, like, wacky inverse of our own. And it's very, very colorful. I very much enjoy the mix of
honestly, colors. Like, anytime a show is like, hey, let's just have the wackest backgrounds we can do. Like, anytime they commit to, hey, this is a completely different world, or a secret world within our own, let's have some fun with it, it's like, fuck yeah, thank you.
Like, step one was like, okay, so the sky will be green, right?
Very, right. Very alien. I like these weird, like, rock formations, just these weird curving, like, they look like rib cages throughout the land.
Or spider legs.
Or spider legs.
Think about it. No, I do enjoy, like, the... They don't do much world building here, but I do... Like, you get a little taste of the world that the series is going to be taking place in. And I think it's effective. I mean, I'm glad that it's going to be taking place in the inner world, not the outer.
Yeah.
Again, I got, like, no connection to this B-train character design philosophy, but... I don't despise it. I like his Sentai armor.
I love all of the costume designs for, like, we don't get to see any other Spider Riders in this episode, but, like, looking at the images of everyone else, they're fun. They everyone kind of has their own unique spin while it still looks uniform enough.
And they're not too busy, which is, I...
Yeah, like, a lot of design... That's a very easy design pit trap.
Mm-hmm.
Because you always want to be like, ooh, this would be cool, but this would also be cool, and this is cool, and this is cool, and then you end up with, like, a character with way too much going on.
You have a 17-year-old DeviantArt design. Ah, man, are we gonna get one protagonist this month that doesn't have this... vest over t-shirt and goggles?
It's the mid-2000s. This is what we do.
So no, okay, well, this is just the uniform of your anime protagonist at the time.
What is the Beyblade kid wear?
Oh, he's got a vest. He's got a backwards hat. You better believe that vest is red, too.
Fucking course it is. He's a protagonist.
Ah, man. Yep, it really was easier back then.
When there's just a concrete look that you're like, fit your protagonist into this protagonist shape hole, please.
And I will say, I like the designs of the spiders.
Yeah. Again, we only see one in this episode. But, like, they've all got a lot going on.
Yeah, they're walking a weird, like, tightrope between inorganic and organic.
Mm-hmm.
I genuinely can't tell if these are machines or not.
I think they are supposed to be living creatures.
You'd assume so, but yeah. Wow, do they just look like Evangelions.
Are we going to make the assertion that that's another thing we can throw into the anime pot for this?
Again, pick and mix, just like, sure.
All right.
Yeah, so the look of the show, it's not bad. It's serviceable, it's totally fine. I think the character design outside of the protagonist, it's good.
Yeah. We don't get a lot of shots of, like, the villains. We get, like, one shot of the big four at the end, and, like, from that, I can assume, I like all the different villain shapes we've got going on with them.
I also like that the villain team is called the Big Four.
Yeah, like, they know.
All under the rule of Lord Mantid. So all bugs in this world outside of the arachnid spider are evil?
I guess so. Because, like, all of the villains are, like, they have scorpions as their main kind of symbols.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I guess that's fair. That is another arachnid. Does that mean there could be crabs in this world? There could be giant mecha crabs?
They were going to address that in Season 3, but...
Shit.
The interest just wasn't there. But, like, Lord Mantid is a mantis. One of them, of the big four, I think one's a...
There's a grasshopper.
There's a grasshopper there.
There's
a bee. There is a stag beetle. I don't know what...
There is Larva Pea Grasshop.
Why does she get a full name?
No, it's a dude.
Larva can be a
girl's name. The lady is Bee Rain. So she's Bee. And then Stags, so a stag beetle.
Okay, so this would be a good time as any to say, this show in puns.
There's a lot of puns going on, especially in the dub.
It can keep it. It can just... take those puns wherever it found them and just leave them there. It's part of the reason why
really...
I hate this protagonist so much.
Yeah, the show's really trying to push this, like, let's kick some bug line. They're really trying to make it happen.
It's not going to. It didn't.
It didn't. I never heard a single person say, let's kick some bug. Not once.
Failed to catch on. Was not the cultural moment that they thought it would be. It's no eat my shorts. I feel like... So, you said you did watch a little bit of the original Japanese?
Literally just the opening sequence.
Okay, just the opening sequence. Because we have a clinical case here of overwritten English dub.
Yeah, there's a lot of moments where, like, a line is being delivered and the mouth, she ain't moving.
Yeah, or the mouth is moving, but he's saying, he's like running his mouth a mile a minute. The dialogue is just coming at you like a machine gun, because that's what the mouth, they have to match the mouth with something.
Yeah,
we have to fill this cartoon with noise.
Yeah, this feels very much like they didn't want the show to ever sit still for even a second. So, like, there's this, like, kind of running inner monologue going on for Hunter as well that I'm not sure is part of the original.
I would assume not, because he just never shuts the fuck up, and he says nothing of substance.
Like, sometimes less is more, guys.
Like, I feel like if you were to compare this with this English dub with the Japanese, I guess we can't even say, like, the original Japanese
here. Yeah, because they aired simultaneously.
Yeah, and they were produced at the same time. But I feel like one specific moment, do you remember when Corona is firing her arrows at him and he runs away, falls, and then keeps running?
Yes.
I feel, because there is that entire exit, he does not stop talking.
Yeah, and even after he's gone, he's like running and talking about that interaction to himself.
Just
like, oh man, I should have talked to her. She seemed normal.
Yeah, I feel like the Japanese version would have been a little more shown a little more restraint towards
the
character's dialogue.
Yeah, like that's a thing that like. Kids don't need that much distract, like, especially at an age where they would be watching this show. You can just take a break and, like, let... This is a well-animated show. You can just take a little pause and let the scenery and action speak for itself for a little bit.
Well, the parts of the show that are animated.
Yes.
There's a lot of still frame and...
Oh yeah, this was absolutely show made on the cheap.
And yeah.
But also there is skill to it.
There is skill, yeah, and at the very least, it made it to 52 episodes.
Yep.
Yeah, so this, I think we already talked about the what happens in this episode. Mm-hmm. He comes to this world, meets Shadow, transforms, and yeah.
And that's it.
Mm-hmm. Anything left to say before we get on to the cast?
Nah.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine. It's
a serviceable little show. I don't think this is the kind of show that would have absolutely controlled my life at a certain point, but it's fine.
you are giving way too much credit to Bakugan.
Now, that show never controlled my life when we get to Beyblade.
You're giving way too much credit to Beyblade, then.
But, like, it's fine. It does its job.
Inoffensive. It's harmless. It's,
It wasn't even apparently being used to market toys to children, so...
Unbelievable.
I mean, good, like, on it, I guess?
Yeah, it wasn't engaging in any predatory marketing with its highly marketable character. Idiots. I'm sorry.
Foolish.
Left the money on the table there. I did not care for this show, never watched it when I was a kid, but I would have bought one of these.
But, like, the fact that they're not marketing leads me to think that someone just genuinely wanted to tell this story and animate these books.
I'm gonna assume that the authors behind the book series, I'm saying they came from a place of just, I don't know, they were really taken with this story and wanted to tell it. It's the foundation of their marriage, apparently.
God, I love that for them.
Oh, how did you meet? Like, oh, we're both super into mech spiders. And so it just felt like that story needed to be told. Together.
Honestly, romance. Peak romance.
Yeah, if it works for you. Like, keep on.
Yeah.
Anyway, this cast. What happened?
This is not a great dub.
Another thing we might be running into over and over again this month.
I mean, honestly, I have to say, I think Bakugan is a slight improvement to this.
Yeah.
This is, not to disparage anyone in this cast, these are a lot of familiar names. We know these are good actors.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like a problem of direction, of, like, kind of over-animating.
This is the thing, yeah, because most of these usual suspects, these talented actors that we have encountered on previous episodes of Cartoon Night in Canada, not really known for anime dubbing.
Yes, that's the other thing, is this is a lot of, you know, like, original Canadian animation production voice actors. This is not a stable of dub actors, so even, you know, 2006, the dubbing industry has already been going very strong at this point.
They have a whole stable of actors, established.
None of these guys are them.
And
But I'm going to call out Melody Vaughn, the voice director. You could have done better!
I mean, again, it's just a thing where you are getting professional voice actors who are unfamiliar with the nuances of dubbing anime. Because we, at this point, as you said, like, the dubbing industry was established, and Canadian audiences had a expectation for how anime is to sound.
Yeah.
Like, they were conditioned a certain way to watch anime. And you can't just put in other actors into those roles and expect them to change their entire instrument.
Yeah, because that's just not the tone that they're used to. And so it ends up with just a lot of lackluster performances. So to start off at the top with our boy Hunter is Julie Lemieux. And this might be her worst performance on this podcast.
I don't know what direction she was given, because I don't know what this character is supposed to be.
It's a mess.
It's... Oh, man. I can't even begin to describe this voice other than nails on a chalkboard. Like, and I know she's so talented, too.
She's an incredibly talented actress. And, like, it's not even just that, oh, she's being asked to play a young boy, because I know she's done that before. She's the lead in Monster by Mistake. Like...
Yeah.
We know she's capable of it, but, like, she's also putting on, like, I guess this anime protagonist affect on top of everything else. So, like, it's a very... A demanding role has been created out of this. Yeah, like, this is not a demanding role. It shouldn't be, but it has been turned into a demanding role.
they just expected her to really crank up the rasp on her voice, and it just caves in the entire performance.
Yeah, I think it makes Hunter even more unlikable.
Yeah, it's like for no fault of her own. It's all a matter of direction because we know she's talented. We know she can do a character like this. Her performance in Bakugan was better.
Yes, it was.
So it's not even a thing where, because she does sparse anime, over her career, she did a like sparse anime role, just here and there.
She dabbles.
Yeah, but like twice she was called on to be a main cast member, and both times kind of beefed it.
Yeah. But
which is unfortunate, because we all like Julie Lemieux.
We love her!
We do not like Hunter Steele.
We do not like Hunter Steele.
We do not claim him.
His better half, Shadow, is played by new to this podcast, Joseph Motiki.
Yeah, not familiar.
Well, he's new to the podcast, but I saw this man's face, and I was 3 years old again. Because he was the host of the TVO Kids Crawl Space in the late 90s.
Oh, shit.
And so this was like, I saw this man's picture and I was like, I know you. Why do I know you? It was because when
just
I was
went through a crisis of memory for a moment.
Yeah, and it was like just these distant, like literal toddlerhood. I've seen your face. I do not have a problem with his performance as Shadow.
I think he gets out the best.
He does. I think some sort of voice effect should have been put over him. Because he is voicing a creature.
Yeah.
And yet this creature just talks like a dude.
I mean, maybe because the main pairing would be Hunter and Shadow. They didn't want two heavily effective voices.
It didn't need to be heavy. They didn't need him to sound completely alien. I just think some sort of little, like, not quite tinny affect, but like.
So you're saying he shouldn't sound like Waspinator from Beast Wars?
Well, maybe, I don't know. Maybe he should.
Is that not the step too far, though?
Just a tiny bit.
His performance is fine, and you mentioned it before, his characterization is pretty good. I like his.
I think Shadow is my Shadow's my favorite character on this first episode alone.
And his dynamic with Hunter works pretty well for what it is. It's just no fault of his own. It just doesn't leave enough of an impression. Yeah.
I do like this idea of like the straight man and fool dynamic, but the straight man is a literal spider.
The straight man is the mechanical spider, while the fool is the 11-year-old child.
Yeah, I am pleased with their dynamic.
Okay, I'm noticing a little bit of a pattern here, where like these actors that we're talking about, they're not big in anime, but they keep coming up in the same
series. Patches, yes.
Like Metabots, this working on Beyblade. Maybe this is all done by like the same companies?
Entirely possible. A lot of them were also in Bakugan.
You said both Beyblade and Bakugan were both Nelvana co-productions.
Yes.
As well as Metabots was licensed by Nelvana, so.
Yeah, it could be that these are like they are Nelvana contracted voice actors, and so this just kind of slotted in.
Yeah, so wholly unprepared to take on an anime voice role.
Very much so. As our other spider rider that we get to meet in this episode, Corona, the unfortunately named Corona, we have Stacey DePass. She is a returning actor. She was Iris on Ruby Gloom. So again, we know she's a better voice actor than this performance would imply.
Oh man, this one is not this.
It's
this
rough.
Is the worst.
This is the worst
of the cast. This could have used a take 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Wow.
Yeah. This is another case of, like, I don't know what she was told.
I would like to know that, yes. I would like to know what they were thinking with her direction, because, oh man. Does she ever not sound, like, completely out of it at all times?
Like, out of it, I don't know if what sort of character they're trying to go for with her, too. If she's, like, kind of ditzy, but competent girl who's going to introduce our protagonist to the rules of the world. But also, she just sounds kind of done with it.
It's a weird contrast to the rest of the cast who are, like, overly invested.
She sounds, like, bored.
Like, while everyone is giving a performance of a low-budget dub of a 90s anime, she is voicing a character in Bible Black. It's...
How fucking dare you?
It doesn't mix.
Oh... I was not ready to think about Bible Black today.
I'm just glad that you got the reference, so that wasn't awkward. imagine if you didn't pick up on it. That would be weird.
Yeah, you having to explain. Okay, so there's this fucking hentai.
No, but I know you. I knew you were going to get that. Sorry to break it to you, but there we are.
We are the worst. As fucking Princess Sparkle. We have an interesting addition to the Cartoon Night in Canada voice actor Hall of Fame, Melanie Tonello. She was a child actor. She was in the
I'm cheaper, so sorry.
She's best known for the Cheaper by the Dozen franchise.
Oh.
And that was my first when, because she only has, like, two lines in this episode, but I very quickly identified, like, that is a literal kid. That is...
Right, this would have been 2006. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
that is a wee bairn. So I don't know how she got drafted into this.
Why is it always, like, one?
Yeah, there is just one literal child in this voice cast of where, like, all of the characters are 11 years old, but we're only gonna cast one actual child.
Why does that always happen? Why is it always, like, one token child on the cast?
I don't know.
Because they're never good.
We don't really get a lot, I assume, because you watched further in, so you would know that... I assume Sparkle has more lines.
She does not appear in the second episode.
Oh, okay. Well, then never mind.
And I watched half of the third episode, and they were walking up to the Spider-Rider HQ, and that's when I thought, like, I could be doing anything else with my time, like watch Bible Black.
Never again.
Okay, that was one reference. Okay.
Yeah.
Striking that from the record.
No, I was gonna, like, never watching it again.
You're gonna miss out on all the nuance, though. It really gets good around the third or fourth. That's when you really pick up on those themes. And everything starts to make sense better.
Yeah. That's when it really, really starts to click.
It's a rewarding rewatch, you know?
So the last voice actor I pulled up is, I think, my second favorite performance. Just by virtue of love a good villain... So as our main villain, Lord Manted, we've got Lawrence Bane.
A legend in his own right.
Yes. I mean, fuck, he was on X-Men the Animated Series.
Playing Gambit of all people, one of the most notable performances in that series. Like, one of those memorable characters from that original 90s cartoon.
Yeah.
The thick... Nolan's accent that he put on for that one. It's legendary.
Yeah, he's an incredible actor, and I love a good villain voice, and he's got a good villain voice.
I mean, the platonic ideal of any villain voice is like they have to be aware that they are a villain and be just in love with that idea.
Yeah. Like, if your villain isn't a little bit snide, I don't want it.
Yeah, just, like, with every line of dialogue, it's just, like, a little prick of pleasure just yeah. radiating through their vocal cords.
If your villain isn't having a fantastic time, I send it back.
Yeah. And Lord Mantid, don't get much of him here. We get, I think, literally one line of dialogue.
I think he has a laugh at the end of the episode.
There you go. Just another tick in the good villain corner.
Yeah, he's having a good time being evil. I'm on board. Yeah. I don't need a whole lot from a villain.
No. It's a pretty low bar to clear.
Yeah, and he crushes it.
Yeah. I like his performance. Yeah. What I heard of it.
So yeah, Lawrence and Joseph, you fucking nailed it. Everyone else, see me after class.
Yeah. We'll be running lines later.
Yeah. This was a great read through, guys. I have notes.
Stacy, you will have to give up your summer. We have to go back to square one, girl.
Yeah.
Anything left to say on this little arachnid riding show?
It's an interesting It's a weird little show.
I like that it confirmed and denied this ongoing canon of these pseudo-animes that I was making up in my head.
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, that it's not selling toys.
It's not selling toys, but it had the usual voice acting subjects, and mm-hmm. also is very much a sum of its heavily inspired parts.
Yeah.
Like, you can point to certain aspects of the show and see exactly where it's curving from every frame. And I find that very fascinating, just how inauthentically authentic these shows are.
That's fair. I did think of another thing I wanted to say also.
Okay, go.
Was that I love that this is a show where, like, the hero only gets to survive because a villain of the week was an idiot and interrupted. Because Shadow was 100% about to stab Hunter in the heart. And then the villain was like, aha, I'm going to defeat you. And it's like, bro, you just needed to shut up for 20 seconds and you wouldn't have to.
I mean, Shadow would have preferred that because now he is bound to Hunter.
Shackled.
For life.
Yep.
Gotta, I hope that voice grows on you, buddy.
I like to think that this is gonna have, like, an Aladdin genie ending. Where, like, the series is gonna end with Hunter being like, you are free, my friend. That's it.
No, the antics of Hunter are gonna break down this decades-long held treaty between the spiders and the humans, and it's gonna bring on a whole new war. Like, Lord Mantid was the beginning of their problems.
Are you saying that Hunter's gonna be the BBEG for season 3?
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay, I'll start drafting that right away.
He'll be the catalyst for the new dawn. Yeah, Spider-Rider's kind of mid. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to yet another episode of Cartoon Night in Canada. If you like what you heard, and how could you not, please consider giving us a like, share, subscribe, and or review on your podcatcher of choice, preferably Apple Podcasts, because that helps us reach the widest possible audience. Hey, we talked politics at the start of this episode. Want to tell us about why that's a problem? Please, yeah, go ahead.
Please, get at us in the comments.
If you want, or did you like that? Should we talk more about politics?
Get at us in the comments. Really, truly, engage. Start an argument.
Yeah. And you can also follow all of our hot political takes that we tweet from this account on Twitter at Cartoon Night Pod, where we post episodes every Saturday.
Except when we don't.
There are many Saturdays in a year, and we can't hit them all. Sometimes we like to have a weekend, you know?
Sometimes we're just sleepy little guys and we've had crazy busy weeks.
After, like, coming back from COVID, this is, like, my work promised me some lighter load, and now I am suddenly working 7 days in a row.
So that was a fucking lie.
So, yeah, they were not being honest there, and we will see where I am come Sunday when we have to record again. You can find myself on Twitter at CinemaCreep, where I'm going to tweet my reactions to my latest rewatch of Bible Black.
Oh God.
It's going to be a minute by minute breakdown, mostly just screaming, just unhinged gobbledygook.
And you can find me at Sylvie Skeletons, where I'll be tweeting much less depressing things.
I guess. that's ugly. Okay, have a good one.
Bye!